Hello and welcome to this episode of the Photonic Podcast with me, Jeremy, public member of the Photonic team, Angus Ramsey, the lead investigator of the Photonic, and today's guest, Professor Chris Price and Lee Callahan, public member of the Speedy team. Chris is based at Newcastle University, where, among other things, he's studying how to improve the diagnosis and intervention of thrombectomy in stroke patients. For the uninitiated, a thrombectomy is the removal of a large clot, otherwise snappily known as a thrombus. This is done using a really long wire that's pushed up a blood vessel, guided by a scan, to the site of the blockage and, by wonderful means, is physically withdrawn from the body. Lee is a member of the public, like me, and, like me in the Photonic study, is a patient representative, giving the patient perspective on research and helping Chris and other researchers avoid making avoidable mistakes and assisting with some data analysis and improving recruitment and retention plans. Would you say that's fair, Chris, Lee?
Well, hello, and thanks very much for having us join the podcast today. Yes, I think that's a fair summary, Jeremy. I think we are hoping to improve the access to treatments that particularly remove the blood clots associated with stroke, because it's really important for emergency stroke care.
Wonderful, wonderful. Photonic is a research study funded by the National Institute for Health and Social Care Research to look at pre-hospital video triage, which is a new way to check whether patients are having a stroke. And in our podcast, we want to keep our listeners updated on how Photonic is progressing and give a bit of insight on the people involved in our work. So in this podcast, the aim is to reduce the Speedy study because there are areas where the Speedy study and the Photonic study overlap. So, Angus, can I begin by asking you, is there anything you'd like to share with us about the study since the last podcast?
Hi, Jeremy. It's really nice to see you. It's been a little while since we last did one of these. So I guess we've been really busy since we last did a podcast, very much in sort of analysis mode. We've pretty much collected all of the data and captured all of the data that we're going to be using. We've started writing up our findings and presenting these findings to conferences. The main analyses that we've been working on recently have been exploring the experiences of patients and their carers as they go through pre-hospital video triage. We've also been working up an analysis of national audit data, looking at how pre-hospital video triage has influenced organization and delivery of stroke care. So that's all been moving quite well.
You've been so busy, I'm really amazed. I mean, it has been a long while since we last spoke, so I'm amazed just how much has been achieved. Stroke is getting a lot of attention these days, and rightly so. And there are many studies taking place around the country looking at ways patients can have better care and treatment. Chris is another such researcher. So how is it that you and Chris know each other, Angus?
Oh, that's a good question. So, I mean, I've been aware of Chris's work for many years, but I guess we really started to work together at the beginning of Photonic. So one of the things that one needs when running a project funded by the NIHR, the National Institute for Health and Care Research, is to have an independent steering committee. These bodies are there to bring together a range of experts, including academics, patient representatives, clinicians, policymakers, and the voluntary sector, to provide feedback and advice on how the research goes. And we needed someone to chair that committee who brought a lot of experience in this field. And so I consulted with a number of my people in my network, and they recommended that Chris would be an excellent choice. That made a lot of sense to me, and very happily Chris agreed to join. So Chris is the chair of our project steering committee, and he's provided a lot of valuable leadership and expertise right the way through the project.
Absolutely wonderful. So now turning to Chris, can you tell our listeners, please, what is your study all about?
Well, the study we're currently doing is to see if we can identify patients who are likely to need a thrombectomy to treat their stroke. And thrombectomy is that treatment where a very fine wire is guided up into the artery in the brain and the blood clot is pulled out. But it's a very intricate and specialized treatment that can only be delivered in about 24 stroke hospitals across England. So there's many more hospitals that patients with stroke can be admitted to. So in order to get access to thrombectomy, many patients actually need to be transferred between hospitals. So what we're doing in our current study is to see if we can identify those patients who need that thrombectomy treatment whilst they're still in the ambulance and before they get to the first hospital, and see if they can get directly to the thrombectomy center for treatment, which isn't as easy as it sounds, because this often requires the ambulance to travel further. And also, there's no test to identify these particular patients whilst they're still in the ambulance. So we might be able to increase the speed of getting to the thrombectomy treatment, but the trade-off from that might be that we're moving other patients around the system who may not need a thrombectomy. So what we're doing in the study, which is called the SPEEDY study, is to examine how well we can identify those patients by having a conversation between the ambulance staff who are first seeing the patient and the thrombectomy center teams by phone to see if the right people can be identified for that journey directly to the thrombectomy center instead of their local stroke hospital, which is why it's very interesting to link up with Angus and the Photonic study, which is looking at potentially using video for doing that assessment, because SPEEDY is all about speed and Photonic may be more about accuracy, but maybe about speed as well. And it'd be interesting to think about how they could work together. So this is a study that's ongoing at the moment, and we won't have the study results until sort of early in 2026, because it's running across five ambulance services across the UK. But at the end of that study, we'll know whether this is something that should be introduced as a standard way of assessing patients and a standard emergency stroke pathway in the NHS. And we're very fortunate to have a really strong support from the ambulance services and from the thrombectomy centres and from the public as well. And it's really important that we have public support from people like Lee to help us shape the study and to help us deliver the study to get a result that could change care.
Thank you for explaining all that. I'm mindful that our audience consists of other researchers, academics, and also clinicians. But our audience also consists of other members of the public. And one of the things that I think that members of the public will struggle to understand is how you can pass a wire through a blood vessel and it ends up in the brain without being diverted to the wrong part of the body. And how do you know when that wire has reached the clot? How do you know when to stop pushing is the basic plumbing question. So can you talk us through that, please?
Yes. I mean, at one level, it is a bit like plumbing, but much more sophisticated. It is quite intricate. There are specialized wire devices that are introduced into one of the arteries, quite often at the wrist or at the elbow, and then is carefully fed up through the artery system up into the arteries in the brain. And this is done under the guidance of x-rays. And it's done by people who are known as interventional neuroradiologists, who are super specialized x-ray doctors who have done extra training in being able to do this. And they're a very precious and limited resource, and we only really have enough for this for having thrombectomy in 24 or so hospitals across the NHS, and it has to be done in special X-ray departments that have got the right facilities to allow it to happen. So it is potentially a hazardous procedure. It shouldn't be undertaken lightly, but there is very, very good evidence that if it's done by people who are experts in it, and they pull the blood clot out, that it definitely improves the recovery from stroke and significantly reduces the chance of people having severe disability afterwards. And the quicker it's done, then the better the chances are of making a full recovery. So although there are some risks attached, if you're in expert hands, those risks are a lot lower, and it's worth the taking the risk for people who've had this very severe stroke that happens due to these big blood clots causing blockages.
Golly, I've got so many questions running through my mind, but I'm also aware of the time. I might come back to those questions later on. Can you just explain how easy or difficult was it to enthuse the ambulance service into supporting you with this study?
It wasn't difficult to get the ambulance services enthusiastic. They are already enthusiastic about identifying stroke. They do see this as part of one of their core functions as an emergency response arm of the NHS. The challenge for them really in helping with Speedy is more that Speedy results in a small number of ambulances transferring to a different hospital than the one which is simply nearest for the patient to be admitted to. Because if a patient looks like they need thrombectomy and the nearest hospital doesn't provide thrombectomy, that patient is going to be transferred to a different hospital. So the resources is the challenge for the ambulance service, but the enthusiasm is 110%. We've had some really strong support from the organisations. I think they all want to see improvements in the emergency stroke care pathway.
Amazing, absolutely amazing. I think I've been involved in a number of studies with ambulance service, and I'm always absolutely blown away by the dedication and they have of their work. Turning now to Lee. Lee, how did you get involved in the Speedy study?
Well, hello. Good to see everybody. And I think I've been working with Chris about 16 or 18 months or so. Can't actually recall how I ended up being recruited into the study directly, probably through Voices. So I support Voices for Stroke Association and have done since 2015. So my stroke was in 2014. Again, it was a thrombus. It was interesting because my initial symptoms were somewhat significant for about 15 minutes. And I remember I'd just come off a long haul flight. Following morning, I remember this is heavy right arm, a very screaming noise in my head, all for about 10 seconds, and then all disappeared almost immediately. And I remember explaining to my daughter why I probably should just go pop along to hospital and get things looked at. And it was, that you look fine, you seem fine. Are you sure you want to do that, Daddy? It was one of those examples where I wasted a lot of time going to the wrong hospital because I got a lift from a neighbour instead of calling any emergency services because it had cleared up. And actually in hospital, the symptoms were coming and going, so that gave the specialist a real problem trying to diagnose exactly what was going on. And I then had to be blue lighted across to UCL, where I was obviously seen by the team, but again, no symptoms. My stroke actually happened that evening whilst I was in UCL, I could tell that obviously with the benefit of the insight into the study that the clots were moving around, freeing up vessels, returning me to pretty much 100% function. I remember the team testing me at UCL, I was absolutely fine with full strength and everything. Very good balance and coordination. So you could see why, and I appreciate this as soon as Chris explained the study to me at the start, why this would make such a huge difference by just simply removing the physical problem of the clot in place. And the impact on patients having this intervention is so clear and so manifest that you kind of wonder why every country isn't looking at trying to solve their challenges with patients along this route and trying to look at intervention. Because I thought in the blue light across London ambulance team, I was basically just sitting on a bed, you know, being monitored, but absolutely fine, but nothing really happening in terms of early diagnosis or pre-diagnosis before you get into the team. So it's left all to the hospital. So I can clearly see when we started the study where this would make a difference and why it would have such a big impact on patients almost immediately.
Amazing journey you've had, absolutely amazing. You mentioned at the beginning of your talk there, voices. Can you explain to the listeners what voices are, please?
So Stroke Association, and this actually goes back before I joined the team, have had voices as a patient representative group of those who have either been carers or have had strokes themselves, and give support to various different teams across the UK looking into research, or those looking after patients themselves, particularly specialists, to give a voice to patients and patient care. And so when diagnosis changes are made, when interventions are discussed between teams, when new drugs are looked at, or indeed different ways of intervening in the stroke recovery and diagnosis activity, then this is exactly where Voices gets involved. And we have a small steering group of about 12 of us. We recruit across the UK. We ask those who have been patients or are carers to join and give a voice to whether they can see any challenges or issues with what's being proposed. But it's important that when you've got all the super clever people in the room talking about medical challenges, that there is somebody saying, has anybody thought about the perspective that this will have on patients and on their recovery, and indeed carers? And lots of the initiatives that the team look at throughout the year will tend to be focused just on making sure that different elements of stroke survivors and everybody's journey is different. So mine will not match anybody else's. You can all bring your own perspective, and you can all give a really good insight into how things could be changed or improved, and just making sure that amongst all the other changes that are going on, the voice of the patient is considered.
Marvellous, thank you. Is this the first research project that you've been involved in, the Speedy project?
I've probably done about six or seven over the time, as well as sit on a number of funding groups that direct NHS funding to research projects, particularly for PhD and for specialist teams. And I've probably done about six or seven, not in any way similar to Chris's one, but other projects across that period, because, you know, my stroke being in 2014, quite a long time ago in stroke terms. I was lucky that although significantly impacted on my right side for 3 or 4 months, I managed to get back to work quite quickly. And I did have a sense of how the Stroke Association could do things slightly differently or include patients even more than they were at the time. And I mean, one example was just trying to read the information that the Stroke Association had at the time. When I remember thinking, you know, all the sort of pictures were of either extremely old men with walking sticks or extremely old ladies with all sitting down with no young people or no younger people. And I was sort of 49, thinking that that's quite a strange demographic to represent stroke victims. And it was probably my first involvement. just to give a sense of, you know, you could certainly improve how this is perceived by those coming through this.
Marvellous. Thank you. Well, it's amazing what you've been able to achieve. Coming back to Chris, I understand there are, as you mentioned, there are only a few hospitals across the country that can thrombolyse. Apart from the lack of expertise, are there any other reasons why there are so few hospitals equipped to do this procedure?
Yes. So there's quite a complex number of reasons, really. Just to point out that actually all the other emergency stroke treatments are available in all of the hospitals that stroke patients will be admitted to, including treatments like intravenous thrombolysis. But the thrombectomy treatment, it does require that specialist who can do the procedure, the interventional neuroradiologist. It does require the special X-ray departments where the procedure can be done, and it does require for some patients there to be specialist intensive care type support after the procedure, because some patients are very poorly anyway because of their stroke, and the procedure can be very complicated and difficult sometimes, and some patients need that additional support rather than just going back to the hospital where they came from. These are all things that the NHS doesn't have anywhere, and that's actually not unique to the NHS. If you go to other countries, France is a very good example. It's entirely the same setup. They have a certain number of thrombectomy centres, but still 2/3 of the patients in France have to do exactly the same as patients in the NHS and travel a longer distance to get to thrombectomy. And the challenge is that only about 10% or so of patients who've had a stroke would potentially benefit from a thrombectomy, and 90% actually need other types of treatments which can be delivered at a local hospital. So what we're trying to do is to get the 10% very early to the specialist centres that do the thrombectomy, but without swamping them with the 90% whose care can be delivered by a nearer hospital. So that's the challenge that we're looking at with Speedy. And although it'd be a really great solution, I suppose, if there were more thrombectomy centres and more specialists, the problem is there that it'd be a very expensive solution. And also some of the thrombectomy centres that might be created would not be very busy, really. That is then quite inefficient. So we're looking at with Speedy is we're trying to use the best of the structure that we have and make sure that the patients who need the treatment get there quickly, and that the identification of them is as accurate as possible, so that we're not moving people around who've then got no benefit.
You mentioned a word that some of our listeners won't be familiar with, thrombolysis. Can you explain what thrombolysis is and why it's different from thrombectomy?
Well, thrombolysis is a treatment that's been around for nearly 20 years now, and it's a drug treatment that's given to patients who've got a stroke due to a blockage in the artery in the brain. And it tells the body to start dissolving blood clots. And this was shown in quite a number of trials 20 years ago to be a very effective treatment for restoring the blood flow to the brain and then reducing the injury to the brain due to a stroke and helping people recover. And it does still require a specialist assessment. People, when they're admitted to hospital, still need to have a brain scan done. They still need to have somebody who's trained in assessing stroke patients and making the decision to give thrombolysis, review the patient before the treatment is given, because the treatment does have side effects as well, particularly bleeding. And so we need to make sure that it's given to the right patients. But if it's given to the right patients, it will improve their recovery. But for patients who have large blockages, or what we call large vessel occlusion, the drug treatment isn't as effective. And that's why thrombectomy was developed. because if you pull the blood clot out, that is much more effective than trying to dissolve the blood clot. If you think of a blocked drain, it's much better to try and actually pull out what's ever blocking the drain rather than just putting more and more bleach down the drain, which is what thrombolysis would be like. And most patients who get a thrombectomy, they get thrombolysis first, which seems to help sort of reduce some of the clot, but then they still need the clot pulling out with the thrombectomy procedure. So thrombolysis is available really in all of the stroke hospitals that admit patients, but thrombectomy is that super specialized procedure for those patients who've got a large blockage, who are a smaller number, who where it's been shown that the additional treatment of pulling the blood clot out is much more effective than simply trying to use a drug to dissolve the blood clot.
Thank you very much. Now, I'm mindful that our listeners will be probably aware that blood clots cause problems not just in the brain but also in the heart. So is thrombectomy and thrombolysis a procedure that can affect patients with blood clots in the in relating to the heart?
Original work really to develop drugs like thrombolysis drugs was done in treating heart attacks. That was the first patient group where research was done and treatments were introduced. In most places, that's now been replaced by getting patients to cardiology centers that then actually, they don't do a thrombectomy. They open up the artery and quite often put a small tube in the artery called a stent to improve the blood flow. And this patient group is the same sort of group who often are at risk of having stroke as well. They often have the same risk factors like diabetes and high blood pressure. So there's quite a lot of overlap between the two. The difference in terms of the care is that there's about 2 to 3 times as many cardiac centers that can put stents in as there are thrombectomy centers. Because the thrombectomy procedure is requires interventional neuroradiologists, and there's not as many of them as there are cardiologists. Research has shown that trying to put stents in the brain is generally not a good idea. And so the blood clot is removed, but it's a different procedure to what is done to the arteries in the heart. The brain is more fragile, and the risks of the procedure are greater. So there's some overlap, but there's some big differences too.
Marvelous. Well, I'm glad you explained that latter bit, because that was actually going to be my next question. So if there are more hospitals doing thrombectomies, would that make a real difference to patients in terms of the survival and recovery, or are the obstacles to hospitals doing more thrombectomies just to do with cost?
There are issues about the number of interventional neuroradiologists available to run 24-hour thrombectomy services in all hospitals across the NHS. Although the number of interventionists is increasing, and there's part of the NHS long-term plan is to increase the number of people that can do this procedure, and to ensure that all regions have got a 24-hour thrombectomy service available. So there is a resource issue, one of the main issues really is still simply getting the patients who need thrombectomy to the thrombectomy as quickly as possible and recognized very early on. We know that patients who require a transfer between hospitals for a thrombectomy, that their chance of getting a thrombectomy is only about half of patients who happen to be living near a thrombectomy center and go there directly. And also, when patients are transferred between hospitals to get a thrombectomy and they get one, this is generally about 2 hours later than if they happen to be living near a thrombectomy center. So although we could do with some more resources in thrombectomy centers, what we also need to do is have more efficient ways of recognizing these patients and getting them to thrombectomy centers for the current resources that we already have. And that's really what SPEED is about. And to a certain extent, it overlaps with Photonic because that's about identifying stroke very early on and knowing that the patients who are in the ambulance before they get to hospital are potentially stroke and maybe stroke of a certain nature that might mean they need a certain response in hospital.
So picking up on that point, is there a case to say that if video triage as a result of the Photonic study is more widespread, more patients would get the thrombectomy intervention than they would at the moment?
Oh, it's too early to say that. we need to complete both Photonic and SPEEDY. We then even might need a study which is a combination of the two. I'm not sure what that would be called. SPEEDY Tonic, maybe. Because what we need to still understand through the current studies are that it's definitely the best thing for the population of ambulance patients who are suspected stroke to have individuals selected to go to thrombectomy centres, that there's not downsides to that as well as positives. And we need to know from Photonic, I think, that process of video assessment is overall of benefit to patients and the system, because it's very easy, I think, to look at something and say, well, it does what it says on the tin, so it must be good. But the importance of the type of research that we Angus and I are doing and have help from Lee and others to do is because sometimes there can be hidden consequences of things and other patients who might not be advantaged. So I think we'll need to wait until we've done those studies before we know for sure.
So where is your study now? What's happening? What needs to happen before your project ends?
Yeah, so we are running SPEEDY now for probably another year. And then we will have a huge amount of data, possibly as much as information as the care received by about 80,000 patients. And we're then going to examine that data to see if the process that we introduced into the ambulance services to identify patients who might need a thrombectomy, to see how well that worked and how well the phone call worked that they then make to the thrombectomy centres to decide on patients going to the thrombectomy centres, and ultimately to show how many patients out of that big population actually then should have got a thrombectomy and how many did get a thrombectomy and how quickly they got a thrombectomy. And it's a what we call a randomized trial, so we're comparing it to current care in the NHS, which is where patients require transfer between hospitals for thrombectomy. So that data analysis is quite complex and will probably take 4 or 5 months to do, which is why we won't have the results really until early on in 2026. But in the meantime, there's a lot of efforts going on across NHS England to improve access to thrombectomy for all patients. So it's not as though things are standing still until then. And one of those improvements is the pilot evaluations of the video. But it's important we wait until we have the proper trial results so we can confidently know whether then a certain group of patients should be selected to take this faster route to thrombectomy centres.
So thinking about the patient voice in your study, what impact does Lee and his colleagues bring to the SPEEDY study?
Well, I think Lee's already mentioned this, really, that researchers, I think, sometimes get very focused on the research, the process of doing the research, and that it's really helpful to have people in the conversation and in the meetings sort of saying, well, actually, you know, what's the most important thing here? Ultimately, what we're trying to do here is to improve people's lives, reduce the impact of stroke, And actually, the people sometimes who ask the most challenging questions are the public in the meetings. And Lee's very good at asking us some very good challenging questions in some of our meetings to sort of, you know, challenge us on assumptions we make or sort of why we're making certain decisions. And also the public groups that we have, they come up with some really helpful ideas, particularly about engaging with the clinical services, what information we should tell patients and their families about what's going on with the research. And I think will be really valuable when it comes to the end of the study and we have to try and explain the results to the people who use the clinical services and why certain changes may or may not be happening in those services. So very valuable contribution, and we are very fortunate to have such a strong support for SPEDI.
Marvellous. Stroke is a speciality. Why are you particularly interested in stroke as opposed to anything else?
Oh, well, you're going to make me feel very old now, but when I was a junior doctor back in sort of 1992, there wasn't such a thing as a stroke unit, thrombolysis, thrombectomy, and stroke patients were simply admitted under general medicine with nobody particularly interested in looking after them. And at that time, the mortality associated with stroke was very, very high. It had a really negative image, I think, in terms of what it meant to people's lives. And also it had no real investment in treatments or services to develop it. And I could sort of see this as a junior doctor when I was doing my own calls, and felt it was very unfair, particularly at that time when actually cardiac patients were getting a lot of attention. And I was thinking, well, what's the difference here? You know, it's all about plumbing and your arteries and a very similar group of patients, but one seems to now be having special care in cardiac centers and the other group is largely ignored. And I started to get more interested in stroke, and actually I became a research fellow working with colleagues in Newcastle, actually at that time looking in rehabilitation after stroke and the evidence for that. But around the same time, the emergency treatments like thrombolysis were beginning to be introduced and research studies were coming along, and I could see the potential there that we were beginning to make a difference by responding to stroke as a medical emergency in the same way as heart attacks. And that for me was a very easy decision then to spend the rest of my career focused on stroke. And it has since come on to become an officially recognized specialty with huge efforts across the NHS to create formalized stroke services that have really reduced the mortality due to stroke and improved outcomes. And it's now got a really sort of very passionate clinical and research community across the NHS.
I think sort of patients would agree that that they feel passionate about it as well. if you had squillions of money and could fund a single research question, what would that research question be?
As there's only time to suggest one,
yeah, just the one.
I tend to take a population view on things, so I would be very interested in effectively doing SPEDI 2. Which would be to take the learning that we get from SPEDI and from Photonic and to see if combining the emergency pathway direct thrombectomy centers with video and also with any new portable diagnostic tests to see if that improves things. We really lack in stroke any type of test that can be done in an ambulance to confirm that it's definitely stroke or it's a type of stroke that needs a thrombectomy, but there is quite a lot of research going on. And in for heart patients, you can do an ECG heart tracing, and that's really useful. And all the ambulance staff know how to do that, and it can be transmitted to the heart centers. If we can come up with something that would be equivalent for stroke, that would be incredibly valuable. And so I think the, you know, putting a lot of money into a study showing that you can move patients directly to thrombectomy centers in combination with the best from Speedy and Photonic and any portable diagnostic test to definitely confirm it's a large vessel blockage, that I think that would be the ideal study. But I'm sure everyone has their own view on this. And it's really hard to say that one research question is more important than another.
Yeah. Oh, I can fully understand that. Lee, I'd like to ask you the same question. You know, you've had a lot of exposure to research through the work that you do voluntarily. In the research conversation. So if you had all the research funds available to you that's necessary, what would be your burning research question?
It's probably around kit deployed to the ambulance teams to try and reduce the delay factors of identifying what is the issue, because they do struggle to do much for stroke survivors in the back of the ambulance. They do end up obviously taking them to essentially non-specialist teams. There's always a difficult dialogue between patient carers, relatives, ambulance staff as to what the symptoms are and when they started. You know, when did you first notice this? How impactful has it been? And often patients, you know, this happens across all sorts of different areas of medicine. Patients just ignore symptoms, or they downplay symptoms, or they forget, oh yeah, last week I did have something that was potentially worrying, but I've put it out of my mind, carried on, hoping it would resolve itself. And that's a problem for the staff in the ambulance as much as the specialist teams in hospitals. So if there were some diagnostic tests to try and find out whether blood had started to, in effect, overclot, or there had been some blockage, there is an issue around free flow to the brain, then that would make a massive difference to immediate care and indeed, you know, recovery times more generally. So it would tie into Speedy, but it would tie into so many other aspects of cause of stroke and the effects of stroke. And the, Chris is pointing towards, there are various studies ongoing, and there have been for a few years, around improving that kit, but it's expensive to do. And of course, when you deal with the NHS teams across the UK, you're always dealing with separate individual ambulance services across multiple jurisdictions. And so they all have their own ways of working. So if you could deliver some super kit for them to deploy in teams that could either exclude issues very quickly or exclude suspicion very quickly, that would massively help both Speedy and other things.
I think a lot of people are thinking along the same lines as you, Lee. In conversations I've had with other patients, stroke patients, they've expressed very similar thoughts. So you're well on trend there. Coming back now to Angus, you're working on Photonic, Chris is working on Speedy, and I'm aware there are some projects that cross over at points during their delivery. But the system doesn't allow a lot of opportunity for cross-fertilization, so, as I see it anyway. So is that true? Is that a strength or is it a weakness or neither?
That's a really interesting question. I think it's appropriate that projects stick to their designs in order to address the questions that they've raised. I think what's really striking is that in a sort of active research community, and I think stroke research is an active one, people are engaging and sharing their learning as they go. It can certainly help thinking around how one tries to address one's questions. So there can be other ways of thinking about one's analysis, other factors to consider, and you know, other data to request in some cases. So for example, through our steering committee meetings, we've sometimes had advice on how we think about conducting a particular analysis, considering different factors to incorporate into the analysis. So yeah, generally, I think it's appropriate that projects keep moving forward as designed. There's always room for that to a degree, cross-fertilization and suggestion through the research community. And that's why people try to use mechanisms such as conferences, event activities like this to share where they're at and to invite feedback from other people who might have particular views. So yeah, but I'm not sure if that entirely answers your question, but but there is room to keep thinking about how you think about things.
Yes, I can see that. Yeah, there's for the fidelity of the integrity of the study, you've got to keep them separate. But by the same token, there's good reasons to keep on talking between studies that are following a similar theme. So both your study and Chris's pivot around the work of ambulance crews, knowing enough to make an assessment that's going to help a diagnosing clinician. So where are those gaps in diagnosing, and what has to happen to fill those gaps?
So I think Chris and Lee have addressed some of the big issues there around, you know, innovations in that early diagnostic pathway and new ways of spotting potential strokes, ideally that can be more definitive than exist at present. I guess the other side of it for me, I'm very interested in the implications of an innovation, and you know, if one were to find that piece of kit or that test that can be done in an ambulance that says whether someone is having a stroke or not, then looking at how that's introduced, how it is managed, how it is spread across ambulance services so that it's used consistently, where questions around accountability might arise, lots of things around the implementation, and we were talking earlier about unintended consequences of new ways of working. So I think absolutely there's an issue around trying to identify the right technologies that can help identify things, but then thinking about the sort of practical implications of how one puts these into action and understanding how that changes the way in which people behave across the wider system.
Thank you. Well, that's very good. So we're nearly at the end of our podcast. I'd just like to ask you all, what does your working day look like? Angus, what does your working day look like tomorrow?
Well, I've got quite a nice day. I'm basically, I've got a day predominantly of writing. We are just coming to the end of another project that I'm leading, which is looking at the use, the introduction of artificial intelligence for chest diagnostics. And so using AI to help understand chest x-rays and chest CT scans. And we're just coming to the end of the first phase of that, and I'm sort of helping lead the write up of that. So I've got a great big block that I've stuck in from now until I think 4 o'clock when I have a meeting, where I'm just going to be focusing on aspects of writing around that. So it's quite a nice day.
Oh, good, Lee. What does your working day look like
tomorrow? So I look after corporate legal affairs for Aviva, the big yellow insurer, and tomorrow is a quarterly team meeting. I've got it called, you know, the gathering of the tribes. I look after different teams, some based in Hoxton, some in Norwich, some in York, and we tend to get together every quarter, and we're going to talk about how to have good conversations but challenging conversations with our team members tomorrow as part of our development. And then we're going to grab a quick lunch together. So that's that's a regular event, and I really look forward to those sort of getting together with colleagues and discussing what's important and what they're all working on.
That sounds very much like a project that would benefit from PPI, to be honest.
Yes, indeed.
Chris, what does your working day look like?
So I've just been on call for the weekend for the last 48 hours. So I'm not sure today is going to be my most productive day. I have meetings today, which are with my research team at Newcastle University, really partly to talk about the SPEEDY study, make sure the data is coming in from the ambulance services and hospitals helping us with SPEEDY, but also some other studies that we're running, one of which is about diagnostic tests that could be used in ambulances. So we all catch up on a Monday afternoon. Sometimes that involves a bit of cake. Then probably I won't be doing a great deal else and we'll be letting my own brain recover before more meetings tomorrow.
You're based in Newcastle and you tell me about cake. Well, I was expecting to hear something about Newcastle brown ale.
I'm not sure that's made in Newcastle anymore.
Oh, right.
The brewery is long since gone. But it's still very popular.
It's a very, very good, very, very good beer. Well, this has all been very interesting. But as the souffle of time collapses and the Arctic roll of destiny melts, I notice it is the end of our podcast. Once again, thank you, Chris, Lee and Angus and everybody who's listening. Next podcast will be along at some point. So if you'd like to learn more about photonic study, the website has a short explained video and a link to the detailed research plans. If you would like to learn more about the SPEEDY study also, there is a website too with contact details to Chris in Newcastle. Thank you very much and goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you.